Ever get that feeling, like certain cases from law school just sort of burrow into your brain,
Oh, absolutely.
like they're right there in the back of your mind waiting to pop up during some random conversation?
Definitely. Especially the ones that seem straightforward at first glance, but
Yeah,
then
that's right.
explode into this tangled mess of legal issues.
Well, today we're tackling one of those, People v. Armitage. It's about a tragic boating accident, but, well, as we'll see, it's way more than that. It's about causation, statutory interpretation.
The corpus delicti rule.
Oh, yeah, we're going deep on that one.
It's a classic for a reason.
So let's give everyone the background. It all starts on May 18th, 1985, on the Sacramento River. David Armitage and Peter Maskevich, they've been hanging out at a bar.
I had a few drinks.
And around midnight, they decide to take Armitage's boat out for a spin.
Small aluminum boat.
But, and this is crucial, no life jackets, no running lights on the boat. Big red flags already.
Oh, huge. I mean, those are basic safety precautions, let alone legal requirements. Right there, it sets the stage for this whole tragedy.
And a tragedy it is. Now, a few hours later, around 3 a.m., some witnesses see this boat flying down the river, no lights, totally erratic, and, well, the boat capsizes,
But both men end up in the water.
clinging to the hull. Armitage, he tells Maskevich to stay put, stay with the boat.
Which logically makes sense, better to be visible potentially for rescuers, but
But panic sets in, right? It's
yeah.
dark, freezing cold water, and Maskevich, he decides to try and swim for shore.
Armitage eventually does the same.
He makes it to shore around 3 a.m., gets help, but tragically, Maskevich doesn't. He drowns.
Awful situation, and that's when the legal battle really begins.
Because now Armitage is facing serious charges.
Felony drunk boating resulting in death under Former Harbors and Navigation Code Section 655C.
A mouthful, but essentially it means operating a vessel under the influence and causing someone's death.
I think it carries serious consequences.
Armitage, he's convicted at trial, but he doesn't give up there. He appeals, and that's where things get fascinating for law students, for anyone interested in the nitty-gritty of how legal arguments are made.
Oh, yeah, this appeal is packed with juicy legal issues.
So, what were Armitage's main points on appeal? What were his lawyers trying to poke holes in?
Okay, so they had three main lines of attack. One, they argued there wasn't enough evidence to prove his guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. Two, they said Maskevich's decision to swim, that was a superseding cause that broke the chain of causation between Armitage's actions and his friend's death.
Right, like it was Maskevich's choice that led to the drowning, not Armitage's drunk boating.
Exactly. And their third argument focused on the corpus delicto rule. Basically, they claimed the prosecution hadn't independently proved a crime happened before using Armitage's own statements against him.
Okay, a lot to unpack there. Let's start with the first argument, the sufficiency of the evidence. It seems like the appellate court wasn't buying it. Why not? What evidence was strong enough to uphold the conviction?
Well, there was quite a bit. The court pointed to evidence of Armitage's intoxication, eyewitness testimony about his reckless boating, the speeding, the lack of lights, and importantly, the violation of safety regulation.
Okay, so it wasn't just about him being drunk while operating the boat. They also factored in his disregard for those boating rules.
Exactly. And this is where it gets interesting. The statute uses the phrase forbidden by law, and the court took a really broad interpretation of what law means in that context.
Wait, so it wasn't just the drunk boating law itself they considered. What else was lumped in under that law umbrella?
They said it includes administrative regulations too, not just statutes. Specifically, they brought up a regulation in the California Administrative Code that requires boats to be operated at a safe speed.
Ah, so Armitage was violating the Maine drunk boating law and this separate speed regulation. And the court was basically like, nope, those regulations count as law too, so your argument sunk.
Pretty much. And that broad interpretation of law is super important. It means violating certain regulations can be enough to trigger criminal liability in similar cases. Think about environmental law, for example.
So if a statute prohibits polluting and an agency regulation sets specific limits, violating that regulation could be considered violating the law in a criminal sense.
Right. It really expands the scope of potential criminal charges related to regulatory violation.
Well, that's significant. It's a good reminder that we can't just focus on those big, broad statutes. Okay, let's move on to the second issue. Maskevich's decision to swim. Was that really not enough to break the chain of causation, even though it seemed like a pretty direct action leading to his death?
This is where proximate cause comes into play. The court basically said, look, while it's tragic, Maskevich's decision was a foreseeable reaction to the incredibly dangerous situation Armitage created. Think about it, middle of the night, freezing water, you've been drinking, your boat just flipped over. Panic is a natural human response.
So the court was saying it's not just any intervening act by the victim that lets the defendant off the hook. There's got to be a level of foreseeability, right?
Exactly. The legal rule is that if the victim's reaction is a normal and reasonably foreseeable result of the defendant's actions, it doesn't break the chain of causation. Like the court gave this example. If someone sets a building on fire and someone else gets hurt while trying to escape, the arsonist is still responsible for those injuries.
Even though the fire itself didn't directly cause the injury.
Right. Because fleeing a burning building is a foreseeable consequence of, you know, setting it on fire. So even if the victim makes a mistake while reacting to the danger, the defendant can still be liable.
That's a really clear example. Are there situations where a victim's action might be so outlandish, so unforeseeable that it actually would break the chain of causation? Even in a dangerous situation.
Definitely. The key is foreseeability. Like, imagine if, instead of swimming towards the shore, Masovich had started swimming further out into the river for no apparent reason.
Yeah, that would be pretty hard to predict.
Exactly. That kind of irrational, unpredictable behavior might be enough to break the chain. But in this case, swimming towards what he thought was safety was a totally understandable, foreseeable reaction.
So even though it was his choice to swim, it didn't erase Armitage's responsibility for creating the dangerous situation in the first place.
Right, and the court really hammered that home with this line. Having placed the victim in peril, defendant can't claim exoneration because the victim didn't react perfectly.
That's a powerful statement. Okay, let's tackle that final legal argument, the corpus delicti rule. For our listeners who haven't gotten to this yet in their studies, what does that even mean?
Okay. Corpus delicti, it literally means body of the crime in Latin. Basically, it means the prosecution has to prove a crime actually occurred before they can use the defendant's own statements against them.
So in Armitage's case, they couldn't just rely on him admitting he was drinking and driving the boat. They had to present separate evidence that a felony drunk boating actually happened, leading to someone's death.
Exactly. It's all about preventing someone from being convicted solely based on their own words, which could be unreliable or coerced. They need independent proof that a crime even took place.
So did the prosecution and Armitage manage to meet that requirement? Did they present enough independent evidence?
They did. The court pointed to witness accounts of the reckless boating, the fact that the boat was found capsized, and sadly, the discovery of Maskovich's body. All of that combined was enough to establish the corpus delicti that someone had died as a result of a crime related to boating.
So the court basically shut down all three of Armitage's arguments on appeal. They said there was enough evidence of his guilt, Maskovich's swim didn't break the chain of causation, and the corpus delicti was properly established. Ouch.
Yeah, the conviction was upheld.
Okay, let's step back for a second and distill the key takeaways from People v. Armitage. Based on this case, what would you say is the essential test for proving felony drunk boating? Like, what are the must-have elements?
So, pulling from the case, we can break it down into a four-prong test. One, was the defendant operating a vessel under the influence? Two, did they violate any laws or regulations related to boating safety, including those administrative rules?
So both statutes and those more specific regulations.
Yep. Three, did that violation proximately cause someone's death or injury? And four, was the victim's reaction that led to their death or injury a foreseeable consequence of the dangerous situation the defendant created?
So even if the victim made a bad call, as long as their reaction was somewhat understandable given the circumstances, it doesn't automatically get the defendant off the hook.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head.
Okay. You've mentioned proximate cause a few times now, and it's obviously crucial in this case. Can you give us a little law school refresher? What does proximate cause really mean in criminal law?
Sure. Proximate cause is essentially the link between an action and its consequences. It means the defendant's action was a direct and substantial cause of the harm without some totally random or unforeseeable event breaking that chain of causation.
And how is it different in criminal law compared to, say, civil law?
That's an important point. In criminal law, the victim's own negligence or mistakes usually don't absolve the defendant of responsibility as long as the victim's actions were a foreseeable response to the danger the defendant created.
So even if Maskovich made a mistake by swimming, Armitage could still be held liable because that decision was a foreseeable reaction to the danger of being in the water after the boat capsized. A danger caused by Armitage's drunk boating.
Exactly. In criminal law, you take your victim as you find them, flaws and all.
Got it. So why should our listeners, most of whom are law students, care about a case from what, almost 40 years ago.
Yeah.
What's the lasting significance of People v. Armitage? Why does it still matter?
I think it's relevant for a few key reasons. First, it shows us how courts can interpret law in a really broad way, expanding it to include administrative regulations, not just statutes. That has big implications for how all sorts of regulations can be enforced, not just those related to voting.
Right, like you were saying earlier with the environmental law example.
Exactly. Second, Armitage emphasizes that in criminal law, defendants are usually responsible for the foreseeable consequences of their actions, even if the victim isn't totally blameless. It's that take your victim as you find them concept. And finally, it shows us the corpus delicti rule in action. It reminds us that while independent evidence is needed, it doesn't have to be a confession. Circumstantial evidence can be enough to establish the body of the crime.
All really important takeaways. Can you give us another example, maybe a hypothetical, to illustrate proximate cause and how it might apply in a different context?
Okay, imagine someone's driving recklessly, runs a red light, and another car swerves to avoid a collision. Now, the swerving car doesn't get hit by the reckless driver, but ends up crashing into a tree and the driver gets hurt.
Even though the reckless driver didn't actually hit them.
Right. But under Armitage, that reckless driver would likely still be held liable for the injuries. Their actions running the red light created a dangerous situation that foreseeably led to the crash, even though they didn't directly hit the other car.
So the chain of causation is still intact because the swerving was a foreseeable consequence of the reckless driving.
Exactly.
That's a great example. So to wrap things up, in People v. Armitage, we saw a broad interpretation of law, a reaffirmation of that take your victim as you find them principle, and a clear application of the corpus delicti rule.
Yep. And it's a case that, even though it's specific to voting, has broader implications for understanding those fundamental legal concepts.
Absolutely. And to leave everyone with something to ponder, if law can be interpreted so broadly, encompassing administrative regulations, how might that affect other areas of criminal law? Areas with tons of regulations like environmental law, workplace safety, or even financial regulations.
That's a great point.
It makes you think about how far-reaching the impact of this one case, this one boating accident, can really be.
It really does.
So that's our deep dive into People v. Armitage. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me.